And hi, everyone. Welcome back to Showing Up Whole, the place where we discuss balance in mind, body, heart, and spirit in every aspect of our lives. And today we are diving into a topic that's deep in my heart. As most of you know, we are diving into parenting, spiritual parenting, but more importantly, or more specifically, the yoga of parenting. We are talking to Sarah Isrin, who's the author of a beautiful book called The Yoga of Parenting. Sarah is a world-renowned yoga educator, content creator, and mama based in the San Francisco Bay Area. She's the author of The Yoga of Parenting, and Sarah loves guiding people along their wellness and parenthood journeys. Her words, classes, and social media are supportive healing spaces where people can feel seen and heard. So we are discussing all about parenting, yoga parenting, and how to combine those two for wholeness. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, I'm so excited. You and I had our pre-chat a couple months ago, and I was like, we should have been recording that because we had such a rich conversation. So I'm even more excited now to see where we go with this. And I love what you offer the world. And, you know, thank you so much for sharing my book and my voice on here today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for reaching out, for telling me about your book, and for coming on, because I must admit, it's so funny. I don't usually do pre-chats to these, what most people don't know. And so when we did connect at a pre-chat, there was almost a part of me that was like, we should record. This is all about those real conversations, right? About what it is. I like to dive in to the present moment, which is all about yoga, isn't it? It's all about being in that beautiful flow. So. Yeah, let's see if we can kind of recap our original pre-conversation here. So tell me, yoga of parenting. This is such an amazing, I got to say, your book is beautiful. I've been reading it. It is truly fantastic. And I love how practical you create this flow of finding presence in your parenting. The beautiful end, you know, you have this beautiful system of the layout where it is like, you know, your top tips for the summary of each chapter at the end, and just a beautiful practical mix of flow and ease. So thank you for sending that and sharing that with the world. And let's talk about that. What is the yoga of parenting, and how do you combine those two?
Well, it's funny because, you know, books go through so many different titles, right? Like what your original idea is and what you're originally pitching, it's very different than what it ends up being. And, you know, for good reason, you're working with different editors and everybody's got a different opinion. And then, you know, as you're writing the story, things just take different shape. In my case, I had a lot of interviews and that was sending me on different directions, you know, much like I assume, you know, with your conversations, right? These free flow conversations, you don't even know where you end up going. So one of the original titles of the book was actually The Perfectly Imperfect Parent. And I still love that title, but I think it wasn't yoga specific enough. And they really wanted me, you know, that was my expertise, right? Like, yes, okay, I've been in therapy since I was 8. And yes, I've studied a lot of psychology and I've read a lot of books. And I got one semester into getting my master's. But I'm a yoga teacher. I've been practicing and meditating for, you know, 2 decades, and I've been teaching for 15 years. So they're like, okay, well, you have to kind of stand on that, right? Like you can't just like jump into the parenting sector. Also, I mean, the whole thing was going to be yoga based, but we figured putting yoga in the title would just be a little clearer for the audience. But that being said, like the term yoga, like the actual word, right? The root yuj and the word yoga, the Sanskrit word, means connection. And yeah. I would argue that parenting is connection, relations, mm-hmm. right? A joining together of two souls. So sometimes when people, I'm like, you know, I used to think, oh, the yoga of parenting, it changes, right? But like now, even just like in the year since the book was finished, and I've been talking about it with people in depth, like people like you, and I get to brainstorm about it. I used to think, oh, the yoga of parenting was like a practice of parenting. But now I'm starting to think it's almost redundant. And like, you know, it's almost like saying yoga, yoga, or parenting, parenting, because they're just so one and the same, that interconnection.
Yeah, that's beautifully put. And honestly, I will tell you that as much as I love the imperfect, perfect parent, I think that it's beautiful. I find that the yoga of parenting is something that, as much as yoga is a way of life, not just what you do on the mat. And I mean, I think most people who listen to this will have a general knowledge of that. As much as yoga is a practice of life, there is still this feeling of structure to it, which is what's such a beautiful thing about your book, is that it provides structure with flow. And to me, that's a beautiful balance that really needs expressing more often in every aspect of life, because we do have these two sides. And so I find that the yoga of parenting does remind us of that flow of parenting, and yet introducing some of that beautiful framework and structure, which I think is such a unique combination, because we can go all directions. And I mean, I even noticed in your book, you talk about the different types of parenting and the different kind of frameworks of parenting, and all of, you know, how we have these, you know, permissive parenting and authoritative parenting. And honestly, the yoga kind of framework of parenting, I think, is something that could really catch on. So your marketing team was bang on.
Well, you know, it's funny. So in what you're talking about too, and, you know, when we're talking on the physical mat and specifically about physical poses, there's this concept of sthira sukha, right? Sthira being strength and container and structure, like what you were talking about, and the sukha being the flow and the ease and the looseness. And the way that the physical practice is described, or at least, you know, what we're aiming for in all poses, is a balance of those two. So sthira sukha asanam is the Yoga Sutra that talks about it, right? And it's basically saying posture should be a comfortable and steady seat. So from the parenting lens, like, that's everything. I mean, most chapters I talk about that spectrum. So I'm so glad that you came to that, because whether it's that particular chapter where I actually use sthira sukha is about boundaries, but we can think about that in so many different ways. We can think about it in like our efforting, you know, in some ways we have the, you know, I feel like that strong effort towards things, but then also the letting go of the results. And, you know, we are constantly toggling on the spectrum and on the pendulum between those two points and finding where we need to be at any given moment, which always changes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in every relationship, parenting or other, there is this thing of, like you said, the boundaries. So you have the framework, but everything changes all the time, and you can have your basic principles. You can have your ideals, and then all of a sudden you find, well, something doesn't necessarily feel as comfortable as you might have assumed it would have when you set those principles in place. So you have to have that flexibility. Yes. So it's just such a beautiful metaphor, I think, for all of the intricacies that comes in these relationships. So it's really profound, the ability to have that balance. So all right, so you were a yoga teacher for quite a while, and now you have two young children, and this was the birth of the book.
That's my third child.
So how did that flow for you? Like, what was that moment where, you know, coming from a position of having the background of yoga and your psychology and all of this understanding of self-development, and then all of a sudden you have a child? What was that transition for you where all of a sudden you're like, I think I need to actually bring both of these practices together?
So, you know, in addition to being a longtime practitioner and, you know, obsessed with psychology and, you know, very deeply, deeply immersed in it from a very young age, I've also been a writer my whole life. So I think all those lines were happening simultaneously, and one would take the forefront for a little bit, and then the other, you know, whether it was in my undergrad studies and then my, you know, trying to get my master's in marriage family therapy, it was like I went a little more psychology based and then kind of back towards the yoga, or when I'd go through writing jags. So I kind of toggle between all three of them at all times. And I've been wanting to write a book since I could put pen to paper. I mean, this is a lifelong dream that manifested, which is so amazing and wonderful. And, you know, it's the coolest thing to be able to hold that in your hands, right? And that's why it really is the third baby. It's like, you know, it's like lifelong birthing. But to put all three of them together, I mean, I'd always wanted to write a book. When I got into yoga, then I was like, oh, I want, you know, when I was in psychology, I'm like, I'm going to write a psychology book. Then when I got into yoga, I'm like, I'm going to write some kind of yoga book. But I couldn't ever figure out like what the idea was. I was really kind of bogged down in poses and philosophy. And I thought it was my ego that was driving it, because I was trying to write the book that I thought everybody else wanted. Mm-hmm. But when I became a mom, and I dove back into the resources that helped me in my moments of need, which are books. So psychology-based books, parenting books, and yoga books, there was something missing. First of all, the parenting books I read, while brilliant, many of them made me feel way worse about myself. Mm. I couldn't find any yoga and parenting books that were a combination. I found a ton of mindful parenting books, which were incredible, but they're all from the Buddhist lineage. And I was like, wait, what? There's something that's missing here. So I had an aha moment. It was literally like, I remember being in the shower. It was, you know, probably the only time I was by myself in like the last, you know, 2 years or however long. Because I was 20. Jonah was about 22 months when I got pregnant with my second. So I wasn't pregnant with my second yet. I got pregnant with my second the same day or week that I signed my contract.
Oh my God.
Because my book was due the exact same time Jacob was due, which was April. They were both due in April. Wow. But anyway, so the idea to write the book, I mean, obviously I had a barely 2-year-old. I mean, I did have my psychology background. I had my yoga background. I didn't have the parenting background yet. You know, I still don't think I do. I probably won't think I do even when they're in their 40s. But what was amazing and the biggest realization for me was I can't do this book alone, because I can't do this parenting thing alone. I can't do this book alone either. What I'm seeking is a village, and I'm seeking it in the form of a book. And so what if I went to all these different people and I gathered a bunch of wise information and I put it all together into one place? And that was what inspired it. It was like this, the hole that was missing from yoga and parenting in general. And then what I needed in that moment, which was that book and a village. And I was like, okay, let's just put it into a basket.
It's a powerful time. And the way things have been just isn't working anymore. If you've been feeling disjointed, overwhelmed, or scattered, you're not alone. Many are feeling that there's a feeling of needing more. Something's missing. What this feeling tells you is that it's time to claim your inner self and step away from the stories you've been taught to follow. It's time to listen to your heart, to heal your hurts, and learn to lean into the universe having your back. It's time to take all of that self-help book knowledge and embody it, assimilate it, and make it your own. I'm Christina Fletcher, and as a spiritual alignment coach and energy healer, I can help you take spirituality off of the hobby shelf and into your everyday, sometimes messy, life so you can truly show up whole. Through coaching, courses, books, and more, I make sure you have practical tools to support you through these challenging times. To learn more, check out my website, spirituallyawareliving.com, where you'll find information on how I work, as well as a free guide to releasing the beliefs that have been holding you back. I look forward to connecting with you. Love and light.
So when you had the need, when you were looking for the books, and you were looking for that beautiful combination of all of your passions, was it coming from a place of challenge of something that you were trying to figure out within your parenting? Or was it because it was coming from the need, because you were already using certain tools that were working and therefore you wanted to find the outside resources that would express that?
That's a great question. And, you know, I think what people think the answer will be, you know, because you teach yoga too, is like they're going to think that we're going to answer the latter, but absolutely not. My tools, I could not get my tools to work. I had severe postpartum anxiety. I had mild postpartum depression. It was deep in the pandemic. Nothing. My yoga practice was making me feel worse in a lot of ways because it was too much physical energy when I really needed to be doing something restorative. I could barely focus, let alone, you know, sit for a meditation practice. So no, it was not born out of tools that were working yet. It was born out of me looking for the tools that I needed and the tools that I intuitively knew would work. And let's start applying these in real time. So much of what I wrote in there were things that I was dealing with in the moment. And then because I got pregnant while I was writing the book, and it was an HG pregnancy, which is hyperemesis gravidarum. So I was severely nauseous and throwing up the whole time, that and also trying to take care of my toddler and still deep in pandemic, like the world hadn't really reopened by this point. You know, my husband and I were doing the relay race of daycare and you know, between the two of us care. So it was like, you know, everything was happening in the moment. And then my first set of edits was right after Jacob was born. So everything that I had to do then, I got to apply and put into the book. So it was kind of this amazing, like, I'm rereading the interviews. I'm relearning from my own teachers. I'm then relearning from things that I once learned a long time ago, you know, and reapplying it. So it was definitely not from a place of like realization or like groundedness. It was actually because I needed it. I needed all of those practices. I still do. Even now when I get to reread the book for some reason, I'm like, oh, right. I like forget every time, you know?
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And it's such a great way. I mean, like we talk about having these kind of conversations and connecting with other people and getting information from other people. Such a beautiful way that you had those interviews that you can then put into those stories. But then so much of the book is actually information not based on the interviews, or was a lot of that, like a lot of the concrete tools that's coming from you.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I think when I first pitched the book, I was still in my small self. I was still in imposter syndrome. I thought that part of what was going to get the book picked up was if I had these bigger names that I was hiding behind. And also, I was still shy about being a younger mom. My original vision of the book was that it was actually going to be like every chapter was going to be dedicated to a specific parent. And then we were going to weave from there. But my editor, and thank universe, because it, you know, she really saw something. She said, no, you're a good writer, but I want more of you in here. Start to bring in your personal experience. And by that point, I was in the gauntlet, you know, I had started to come out the other side with certain things, and I started to have the material and the juice to be able to talk about it from my perspective. Of course, you know, the yogic theme is like, that's, so now everything is based around the yogic theme, whether, you know, and then underneath that we have a pose to explain it. We have psychology to back it up. We have the interview, but it's also woven together by my own personal experiences. Yeah.
Yeah, which I think is a beautiful thing. And honestly, that's why I think it is important to express that to people. Because honestly, I think that witnessing you throughout the book absorb the information and bring it things from your past and then weave them into the current moment of your parenting is such, that's again, the same kind of practicalities and flow at the same time, where it's that structure and then that flow, you're integrated. And that's one of the beautiful parts of the book. It really is that it creates that through you and through your voice. So, all right. So how do you find this is, I mean, let's continue along that theme. When you actually have witnessed your journey, not just as the writer of the book, but as your parenting journey, how do you find the yoga path of parenting actually shifts your parenting?
Well, I'll share a story of what happened this weekend, which that's not in the book, that nobody knows. You're the first person I'm talking to about this publicly. Is that we were at a kid's amusement park. It's like a discovery center. And my son fell from one of the planes. What did you say?
Do that on the weekend. Wow.
Yes. Yes. Well, not only were we there was I there with both kids, and my sister was helping, but my son fell from one of the structures. And I don't know if you're at that point in the book, but I actually go through a visualization meditation about imagining different scenarios from our kids being in the backyard and in a quiet space and what that feels like in our body, to them almost coming up to a busy intersection and what that feels like in our body too. And the final example is them falling off of a play structure. And, you know, I consciously wanted these things to be visualized because I want us to feel in our body what the nervous system's reaction is to all of these things, whether you're just imagining it, and how our imagination can almost amplify things compared to what was really going on. And I have to say, thank goodness I woke up and did a 30-minute sit that day, because it was all of my yoga practices in one, from grounding in what was happening in the present moment, because you know your mind can go into 1,000 places, to being able to be connected and keyed into him, to also managing all the people around us. I mean, it was full on. He ended up, we had a hospital transfer. He was taken in. And thankfully, the CT scan was clear and he's at school today and everything is, knock on wood, he had he was bleeding from the back of his head, and like,
oh my God,
having to have enough breath and feeling my feet on the floor and really tuning into him. And then my other baby is screaming and crying for me, and being able to kind of triangulate that energy. I mean, 1,000,000%, that was my yoga practice. 1,700%, because let me tell you, there are many weekend mornings where I'm like, oh, just sleep in. And I get up with the kids and then I'm like in the worst mood because I'm playing catch up all day long, but I didn't. On that day, I got up and I did my practice, and thank goodness, thank universe, because it really kept me grounded. And it's not to say that there haven't been, like this morning, there was like a tiny little thing that happened and one of my kids cried out and I was like, what happened? Like, I freaked out, you know. It's not to say I'm like perfect, but there are, by any means, like by, I think because I'm still like in a bit of fight or flight from the weekend, but I mean, there are these glimpses where I'm like, I can feel myself being the wiser person, or I can almost sit back from it. It's like that, you know, observer as opposed to the doer. And that is all the yoga practice. And it's, you know, it's such a relief at times too, because it creates a spaciousness so you can really plan out your responses in a different way and, you know, respond rather than react. And again, it's like, obviously that's why I wanted to call it Perfectly Imperfect, because it's not every day and it's not all the time, but
I think it's interesting when those emergencies do happen, when you have had those things in place. And I think you bring up a really fascinating point where, you know, it's always important to remind people how important it is to top yourself up, to keep yourself topped up, to not just wait until you're fully drained out or in an emergency situation to actually practice that space. That space is actually what sets you up for the day. You know, the other day I was talking to someone and it's like, well, it's like brushing your teeth. It's like, you don't brush your teeth after you get the cavity or just before you're about to get the cavity. You brush your teeth before in order to prevent the cavities. Like that's the, you know, it's the same
great analogy. Yeah.
You have to make sure that you're putting those things in place, even though you don't see the reason why you're doing it, so that you have that, you know, gas in your tank in order to be able to facilitate any stressful situations. And I don't know, I think it is easier to flip out at the minor little things that happen in your life. And then all of a sudden there is something that naturally occurs when there's an actual emergency. It's also fascinating how we can imagine those emergencies and they're always different than what we thought they were going to be.
Well, I also like, I kept checking in. I was like, am I in my body? Am I in my body? No, I'm in my body right now. And like, you know, because there's times sometimes I've been in car accidents, or I've had my own emergencies. I crashed a motorbike in Bali. You know, maybe it's different because that was me and like not with my kids in this way. But we actually had an incident with my son where he stuck a hanger in his eye when he was quite little and learning to walk and somehow got into the closet. And I definitely, it was a mixed reaction. And it's funny because I wrote about it in the book about how proud I was that my yoga practice helped me only freak out a little. But I feel like I was much more calm and even this time. And I know that it was because of, I had done a longer sit. I'm just in a more grounded place in my life right now. Yeah. But It's exactly like what you say. And something I wanted to bring up, because I hear this from people all the time too, is I don't have time to meditate. I don't have time to meditate, not realizing that the 10 minutes that you sit in the morning or the evening, which everybody has, right? you can find your 10 minutes, even if you're sitting on the toilet, but that 10 minutes is actually going to create a spaciousness throughout the rest of the day, so that you're not constantly playing catch up the rest of the day. There's a breathability in everything that you do, and you actually end up finding you have more time. It's the same hours of the day, but there's more spaciousness. And I don't know how or why it works, but this is the science of it. And it's fascinating.
It is absolutely fascinating. And it's interesting because as long as you're telling a story that you don't have the time, you won't have the time. Mm. But if you start looking for the 2 minutes and then the 5 minutes and then the 6 minutes, you'll find that all of a sudden it creeps up. And that can be just a question of putting down your phone. Because most people will spend 5 minutes on their phone, so it's like, okay, well, if you replace that with that connecting in, then it just builds from there.
And also, like, it doesn't have to be so here. I'm also very much on my phone a lot. I talk about that in the book too. Like, I am on my phone all the time, but I just want to be clear too. Like, it doesn't have to be like, put your phone down and sit in silence for 5 minutes. Right. And I know, this, but like, just to remind your listeners is that like, just even getting outside for 5 minutes and just like feeling your feet on soil and breathing can count tremendously.
100%. Meditation does not need
going for a walk. Yeah.
It's literally, like taking a few minutes to put your hands on your heart and leaning, practicing. One of the things that I often pass on to clients is just the simple mantra of I open to love, I receive with love, I give thanks with love, and I connect with love. That's it.
Like, I just love that.
The times, and you will find yourself feeling far more present and far more in the moment. It's amazing how little time it takes to actually create that space for yourself. It's like a little flip of a switch of awareness, isn't it? Mm. It doesn't have to be the big scary meditation.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So yeah. And I mean, I think there's a level of intimidation that comes in with that pause. So you were already practicing yoga. Did you have a struggle when you started implementing this? What, as a parent, what was your negative chatter around, but I'm a parent, do I have time to actually do this? Like, was there any question or did you glide through that?
My meditation practice has been off and on my whole life. So I started meditating. I didn't even know what I was doing. When I was 12 years old, a therapist taught me visualization meditation. And honestly, I thought it was just an easy way to get out of talking for the 20 minutes. And I would lie on her couch, but I was doing it. I was actively doing it. And I've always had a really big imagination. And I've always been able, I'm highly sensitive. I've always been a feeler. So, I was like in it, and like the little actress in many ways. So, she's like, picture the sand. I'm like picturing like the glistening, I'm like down to it. And I found it so grounding and it was so helpful. And it, it just planted these seeds and this interest in spirituality at a really young age. And then I didn't really get into yoga until I was 19. And I would like dabble here and there with the meditation of it. I started with asana, but I loved strong, fast flow. Like that was, because I'm like super fast and scattered. So I was like, oh, what's the thing that matches my personality? So I got into like the hardest classes and, Ashtanga yoga and, which is a 6 day a week practice, 2 hour practice and, very dedicated. My meditation would be at the end every time, but I never really had like a dedicated sit practice, honestly, until the last year. And I like dedicated. I mean, again, I would dabble and I always practiced and I loved pranayama but like the actual sitting on a cushion, keeping my bum down that's only been in the last year. And I think part of it is my body is kind of broken right now. Those strong, fast flows, you know, I love them, but they don't feel great in the same way. I'm not getting that same dropping in because I'm in so much pain. And when I do work out in a way, then I almost want to be like, I want there it to be loud and bright. And, you know, so I'm missing what I was getting from my asana practice, which was the dark room and the quiet and the tuning in. But since I can't get it through my body, I now I'm just getting it through the sitting. And I actually prefer the sitting. I realize now that like, oh, the movement was kind of distracting me from what I really wanted to be doing. So it's been an interesting transition. It's been cool kind of learning in real time, you know, just getting more and more dedicated to it. Because I remember my teachers would always say, like, you just wait until you get older. You're not going to be wanting to do your leg behind your heads in the same way. And you're going to be more into like wanting to do the long sits. And I was like, yeah, right. I'll be doing leg behind the head the rest of my life. And, you know, no, I would much rather sit now than actually do down dog, which is wild.
Yeah, that's
fun. Never thought I'd say that.
Yeah, I can believe it. Well, and we're living in such a changing time too. So things are changing and our responses and relationships with things are changing as well. So it's fascinating to hear you say that. Out of curiosity, because your kids are now old enough to see this, how do your kids respond to all of a sudden mom sitting?
Well, I do most a lot of it before they wake up. But they always know when I'm doing my yoga practice, and they will like, they're very respectful of Shavasana. They're very respectful of those last few minutes where I would sit and get grounded. So, it, you know, I'm not sure they see like the shift in that way. I probably should do it more often in front of them because I know modeling is such a, you know, an important teaching tool, but I think they, you know, they know when I'm doing my spiritual practices, you know, they are aware of, and they treat with respect. My eldest has his own yoga mat and loves to come in and do yoga and sit crisscross applesauce and all that. And then my baby, I mean, I was meditating with him really like on my body in the very beginning because he's on me all the time. If he could be, he'd be on me all the time. He's 16 months. But you know, so I would breathe with him and do different things with him. So, you know, he's there. I think it's just like a part of what we do. It's not something that they notice because, you know, like you said, it's like, how many times a day does mom brush her teeth? Like, you know, I think it's just something that's just part of our daily routine.
Yeah. Well, and that's exactly, it's a fascinating thing, when it is for the kids that are raised with it as, part of every life, everyday life. It's a fascinating shift that happens. And I always find it interesting, the kids who chose to come when mom didn't know this stuff. Because I mean, I know personally, my children, like my first two children had to actually deal with, you know, stress mom who was figuring out how to implement these things. And they really, really found the contrast. So it was like, yes, mom, please go meditate. Please go. You're much easier to deal with. Like, they knew that structure. Whereas by the time my son came along, that was already so in flow. So he didn't have that same contrast. However, he does integrate it far more into his everyday life, even at 14, because it's just part of his everyday life. So he would probably, rather than an emergency tool, he would use it as an integrated tool. So it's a fascinating thing where kids come to choose. And I do feel like they choose when they're going to come in on your journey and explore that. So,
yeah. I mean, the other thing that it was bringing up for me is that, so they may not see like the 30-minute sit in the morning, but they will see if I, you know, snap at dada and then I apologize to them and I'll say, and to him in front of them and say, mama didn't get to meditate today. So I think that's also important too, is, you know, even they may not be seeing it literally happening, but show them the results, right? Of when you're being more conscious and when you're doing your practice versus when you're not. But yeah, I mean, we'll see, you know, it's TBD because I know some people that are yoga practitioners whose kids just were fully into it. And then I know many where they just reject it because that's like, that's what mom does, you know? So.
100%. Well, and I think also those are things that happen in waves, right?
Yeah.
As long as it's not pushed, as long as it's not like, oh, well, you should do this, you know, I'm always very, very careful of like passing on any advice of like, you know, when I see a kid getting stressed out, I'm like, you could try, you know, a little bit of learning. You could if you wanted, or, you know, some kind of mindfulness, like something. It's like, I've never fly of how to do that because it is their own personal journey. Yeah, the rebels. They discover their own path, though. But,
and maybe they, like you said, maybe they'll come back to it later in life and it'll be, you know, who knows, right? I mean,
it's their journey.
It's their journey.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. This is, I'm so excited for your book to be out into the world. So you have your website. Let's like make sure everybody knows where to find it. You can get it, I'm sure, on Amazon and everywhere as it is. But
yes, the book is available everywhere books are sold. And my website is Sarah Ezrin Yoga.
Okay, brilliant. And when they go to your website, they'll find out about the book. Do you also have services that you offer online, or is it simply the book? I haven't checked out your website.
I have a lot of on-demand classes through different sites. I've got some free classes up on YouTube. I'm adding more content all the time. I'm not currently teaching. I just let my asana classes go, which is just, you know, further evidence of my kind of moving away from that. But I have a meditation course that's coming soon. And, you know, I mean, it's all like the integrated stuff, the pranayama and little bit of movement, but yeah, it's, you know, there's exciting stuff. I'm probably most active on Instagram. Honestly, that's where I spend a lot of time, way too much time, but I love interacting with people on there. So please feel free to reach out, send me a message and ask me any questions.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming and having this conversation.
Thank you, Christina. Thank you so much.
And sending all our best for your third baby, the book, and also your other two babies and your whole family.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much.